Parashat HaShavua is Parashat Emor. Now all of Sefer Vayikra, or better said, nearly all of Sefer Vayikra, deals with the laws of sacrifice, the laws governing the Kohanim, laws governing the Mishkan. Then there's of course a Parashat Kedoshim that deals with the laws of sanctity and the way Jews are supposed to conduct themselves with fellow Jews. Parashat Emor deals first of all with the command to the Kohanim that they are not permitted to come in contact with the dead. Which Kohen is considered one who is permitted and allowed to serve, which Kohen is not permitted to serve, who they're permitted to marry, who they're prohibited from marrying, what kind of sacrifice can be brought in the Beit HaMikdash. And then we have the Parashat HaMo'adot, all of the Yomim Tovim, beginning with Shabbos, Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkos, the mitzvah of Sfirat HaOmer, counting of the Omer. Then there are two small parashiot, one that describes the oil that is to be used in the menorah, and then the mitzvah of the Lechem HaPanim, the bread that was baked every week and placed on the shulchan, on the table in the Beit HaMikdash. 12 breads that were baked every week. They were baked on Friday. They were put on the table in the Beit HaMikdash on Shabbat. They remained there until the following Shabbat, when they were removed and new ones were put in their place. All right. Then comes the second of two historic incidents that are mentioned in all of Sefer Vayikra. The real story of the Jewish people in the desert is Sefer Bamidbar. The story of the Exodus is the Book of Shemot. In all of Sefer Vayikra, there are only two historical incidents. One we already studied, and that was Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the day of the dedication of the Mishkan, the tragic deaths of Nadav and Avihu, struck down as they bring Eish Zora, a strange and foreign fire, into the Mishkan. Here comes the second one. And all of a sudden, sort of, it seems as though it just drops down from outer space here into the parsha, the story of a man who curses, who blasphemes the name of God. Chapter 24, Pasuk 10. Chapter 24, Pasuk 10. This is immediately after the parsha of the 12 Lechem HaPanim, the 12 breads that are to be placed on the table in the Beit HaMikdash. Let's read the parasha. Vayetze ben Isha Yisraelit, the son of a Jewish woman went out. Vahu ben Ish Mitzri, and he was the son of an Egyptian man. Means his mother was Jewish, his father was Egyptian. B'tor b'nei Yisrael, it seems that he went out in the midst of the children of Israel. Vayinatsu b'machaneh, and there was a struggle in the camp, a fight between this ben ha-Yisraelit, the son of the Jewish woman, the ish ha-Yisraeli, and a Jewish man. There was an altercation, an argument, a struggle in the camp. At this point, we don't know who anybody is. No names are mentioned. There are basically three people that are referred to
in this first pasuk? The mother, the son, who is the son of a Jewish mother and an Egyptian father, and then there is another Jewish man, a fight between the two. Vayikov ben ha'isha ha'yisraelit at Hashem vayikalel. The son of the Jewish woman, Yikov here means that he expressed, he said, the ineffable name of God, the Yud Kei Vav Kei, vayikalel, and he cursed, he blasphemed. Vayaviu otoel Moshe, they brought him to Moshe. V'shem imo, finally we are given the identity of one of the principals here, really a not directly involved, but she had something to do with it. The name of the mother, the woman who was the mother of the man who blasphemed, her name was Shlomit Bat Divri Lematei Dan. Shlomit, the daughter of Divri, from the tribe of Dan. So far, it's really all a mystery. What was the argument about? Why does the man curse God? What's happening here? Mystery. We're going to try and unravel a little bit of the mystery. Vayanichu b'mishbar, they placed him in incarceration. They didn't know what to do with him. They knew that one is prohibited from blaspheming. You're not allowed to curse the name of God. But what are you supposed to do with somebody who doesn't curse? What is his punishment? So they placed him b'mishmar in prison, in a place where he was held under God, lifrosh lem al pi Hashem, until it will be explained to them through God what they're supposed to do. Vayudaber Hashem al Moshe lemor, God spoke to Moshe, so say, hotzeyat ha-mekalel michutz la-machane, take the person who has cursed, the blasphemer, take him outside the camp, the som who kol ha-shomim et yideyem ha-rosho, all of those who heard him curse should place their hands on his head, v'rogmu oto kol ha'eda, and the entire congregation should stone him. The punishment is death, and the punishment is death by stoning. Ve'el b'nei Yisrael t'daber le'mar, and to the children of Israel you should say the following, ish ish ki yikalel Elohav, anyone who is going to curse Elohav can mean either his God or his judge. Elohav can also refer to judges, people of prominence and significance. The nosachato, you curse, the one who curses carries his sin. The nokev shem Hashem, the one who is going to express the holy name of God and curse, motumas, is to be put to death. Ragom yirgemu bo kol ha'edah, the entire community should stone him. Kager ka ezrach, same law applies to the ger in our midst, or the one who is a full citizen amongst the children of Israel. Benakvo shame, if he expresses the name of God and he curses, yumat, he shall be put to death. And now it seems that the Torah is going to tell us another few halachot that in one way or another are related to what we're talking about. We're talking about two people who started an argument. We're going to have to find out what the argument was about, if we can indeed find out. But you know, one thing leads to another. Arguments are very dangerous. You can never tell what the end is going to be. The end can very well be injury to one or another or both of the parties. It may very well mean that one is going to cause damage to another one. It may even reach the point where a murder is committed as a result of an argument. Machlekes is bad. And here, look what came as a result of machlekes. And there may even have been justification for the whole machlekes. But even a justified machlekes, there are certain things that you lose control. Either you lose control of yourself, you lose control of others, you lose control of the situation, and then it just continues, it develops a life of its own. And before you know it, the machlekes is, we know what happens sometimes in families. Before you know it, already a brother and a sister haven't spoken to each other for 20 years. That's a machlokes. Tragic things can happen. So therefore the Torah also says, V'ishkiyake kol nefesh adam, a man who is going to hit the life of another human being and kill somebody, modumat, should be put to death. That can happen as a result of machloket. U'make nefesh behemo yishalmena. You may very well cause damage by killing somebody else's animal. You have to pay for that too. Nefesh tachat nefesh. You have to pay for the life of that animal. It may very well be that you're not going to kill somebody else, but a person is going to cause an injury to a friend. Kasher osa, ken ye yoselo. As he did, so shall be done to him. And here we have one of the classic psukim in Torah that the non-Jewish world refers to as, quotation marks, Old Testament. Vengeance, shever tachat shever, a break for a break, ayin tachat ayin, an eye for an eye, shen tachat shen, a tooth for a tooth, kashi tein mum ba'adam, as one injures a fellow man, kein yinaten bo, so shall be done to him. We're not going to discuss this in detail today, but of course, we believe with absolutely perfect faith that not only was Torah Shebichtav, the written Torah, given to the Jewish people, but simultaneous with the written Torah was given the oral law. And in the oral law it was God who told Moshe, and Moshe told the Jewish people at the same time that he taught them this pasuk. He told them, do you know what the meaning of this pasuk is? The meaning of this pasuk is that the only way that a person is really going to feel the extent to which he caused harm and injury is if we would do to him what he did unto his fellow man. However, God, in his mercy and in his compassion, says no, that you can pay the value of the eye for an eye. Ayin for an eye, and this is the way some of the Farshim read it. These three words, ayin tachat ayin, you can read them in one of two ways. An eye for an eye. Listen to the way I'm going to read it. Ayin, imagine that there's a semicolon. Ayin. If the injury that was caused was to an eye, then you know what? Tachat ayin. You have to replace in some way something that is in place instead of an eye. Or ayin tachas ayin, it may very well be a mistake to read it as the English translation is, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But the whole pasuk, and a similar pasuk in Parshat Mishpatim, imagine commas or semicolons. Shever, you broke somebody's bones, and you know what's going to happen? Tachat shever. You have to do something in place of that shever. Ayin, tachat ayin, in place of the eye. So therefore those, we who believe in Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh, the written law and the oral law, were given simultaneously, Jews from the very first moment that this pasuk was said knew precisely what it meant. What it meant was that you should know, as kumtir, you know what you really deserve? You really deserve that the same thing be done unto you as you did to your friend. But no, God is merciful and is compassionate. No, we're going to give you the opportunity to redeem your eye. Instead of losing your eye, you're going to pay. You're going to pay. But it never, at any moment in time, did it ever mean that we take out somebody's eye because he blinded somebody else's eye. Never, never, ever. One who kills an animal pays. You kill a man, you put to death. In matters of mishpat, in justice between men and fellow man, one law applies to everybody. A stranger in your midst, the one who is an indigenous part of the Jewish people, because I am God, your God. The parsha ends by telling us precisely what indeed happened. Ayudaber Moshe b'nei Yisrael. Moshe spoke to the children of Israel. Ayotziu atam akaleilam mechutz lamachane. They took the blasphemer outside of the camp. Ayudgamu to oben. They stoned him. U'b'nei Yisrael asu kasher tzivu Hashem et Moshe. The children of Israel did that which Moshe commanded. Here is the story. So we have the story. We know what happened at the end. We don't even begin to understand what in fact took place. What was the argument about? What was the argument about? Why are we not told who these people were? It may be more important than anything else. Why does this parsha appear precisely here? It certainly is not following in any chronological order, because there has been no history told to us for a number of parashiyot. All of the parashiyot have been talking about laws, statutes, yontif, Shabbos, menorah, shulchan. It's not as though, and afterwards, after event number one, event number two happened. There's no historical or chronological order at all. So why does the Torah plunk down this parasha right here? These are some of the difficulties that we have to deal with. So we're going to begin. It all begins really with an understanding of the first word in the parasha. Let's go back to the first pasuk in the parasha, pasuk Yud. Vayetze. What does Vayetze mean? And he went out. What do you mean he went out? What does it mean? What are we told? What does Vayetze tell me? What do I learn from the word Vayetze? Who needs it? Let me begin with the Eben Ezra. The Eben Ezra says, Vayetze ben Isha Yisraelit, the son of a Jewish woman, went out. Me Ohavo. He went out of his tent. Went out of his tent. And it seems he went out of his tent into the midst of the camp. And he gets into a fight with somebody. So why does what? Why do we have to know this? Why do we have to know that he went out? And what would have been lacking in the event that the Torah would have said, "Vayinotzu b'machaneh"? There was an argument in the camp between a son of a Mitzri and a son of a Jew. But maybe the Torah should have told us. And he got up in the morning. You understand? He had breakfast. After he had breakfast, he went out. What do we learn from his going out? Torah never tells us something that is unnecessary. It could have begun simply by saying there was an argument in the camp. The Ramban. What does the Ramban say about the word Vayetze? Says the Ramban, Tamo, you know what it means? Vayetze betol b'nei Yisrael. He went out amongst the children of Israel. Now, do you hear the way the Ramban is learning the pasuk? Take a look at the pasuk. Vayetze ben isha Yisraelit, v'hu ben ish mitzri b'tov b'nei Yisrael. The Ramban is reading the pasuk as though it said, Vayetze, and he went out amongst the children of Israel. And sort of in parentheses, we're being told, who was this fellow that went out? Mihu zeh ve'ezehu. He was a ben isha Yisraelit, the son of a Jewish woman, v'hu ben ish mitzri, and the son of an Egyptian man. So in other words, the pasuk might very well have said, Vayetze v'tov b'nei Yisrael, amongst the children of Israel, they went out a man who was the son of a Jewish woman and an Egyptian man. And where else do we have something of this sort? So he brings a pasuk from Megillat Esther, Vayetze v'tov ha'ir. When Mordechai finds out that there is a threat, a decree to exterminate the Jewish people, Vayetze went out v'toch ha'ir into the midst of the city, Vayizak z'oko getolo umara, and he cried out bitterly. So when it says Vayetze by Mordechai, says the Ramban, ki yotzei mibeito, he went out of his house, o mimakom moshavo, or wherever he was staying, he went out el ha'ir, to the city. The king said, this fellow also, Yotzo me ohalo, he went out of his tent, only Nikomo, or wherever he was, and he came into the midst of the people, by Yinatsu Sham. And there the argument took place. The fact is that the problem that we have with the Eben Ezra, we have with the Ramban as well. And by Mordechai,
It's telling us that Mordechai goes out into the city of Shushan and cries out a bitter cry. And it means he's going from street to street. He may be going into the Jewish areas of Shushan. We have the same question on the Kabbalah. What would have been wrong? What would have been lacking in our knowledge of the whole story if it simply would have said there was an argument in the camp? I have to know that he went out of his tent or where he was staying. It's for... Yes? Because of the problem with this word, Vayetze, Rashi therefore brings three pshatim on Vayetze. And all from Chazal, from the Medrash, from the rabbis. Let's see what Rashi has to say. And I'm going to be reading it from the... From the text directly. That is where Rashi takes it from. Vayetze ben Isha Yisraelit, says the Sifra, the Medrash here. Minayin Yotza, the Medrash asks the question, where did he come out from? Answers the Medrash, first answer, Mi Beit Dino Shel Moshe, he came out of the court of Moshe. What was the problem that was brought to the court of Moshe? Shebolita ohalo betoch machanet Dan. He came to pitch his tent together with the tribe of Dan, because his mother is from Dan. Amru, so they said to him, Mativcha lita betoch machanet Dan. What? Why is it that you want to pitch your tent in the camp of Dan? Amalehen, he said, Mi benot Dan ani. I am the son of a daughter of Dan. Amrulal, so they said to him, oh, no, you don't belong here. Because the Torah says that as far as tribal affiliation is concerned, that follows the father. Ish al diglo, at the beginning of Bamidbar, it says, Ish al diglo ba'otot lebeit avotam. Yachanu b'nei Yisrael. The children of Israel were encamped according to their father's family. Your mother may be from Dan, but your father isn't from Dan. Nichnas lebeit dino shel Moshe. So what do people do when you have a difference of opinion? He wants to pitch his tent here. The people of Dan say, no, you can't. So he went. They went to the Beit Din of Moshe. They brought the shayla before the Beit Din of Moshe. V'yotza l'chuyav. He went out of Beis Din. They had found him, in a sense, guilty. He has no business pitching his tent in the camp of Dan. For Ahmad went out into the camp, the Kidev, and he blasphemed God. Now, what we have to understand, I mean, this is the way I feel about it, and I think I'm going to find some of the Mepharshim that may even agree. When one hears this pshat, and this is one of the pshatim that's brought by Rashi, don't we in some way, or certainly I feel that way, that the truth is it's a Rachmanis on him? Do you know what we're talking about? According to, we're going to find out who his mother was. Or we're going to find out who his mother was. Not according to everybody. But we're going to find out who his mother was. We're going to find out who his father was. We're going to find out why it was important for him to go to the Beit Din of Moshe. I will elaborate on that in a moment. But meanwhile, just with the information that we have, the feeling is the man comes from a Jewish mother. Let's say his father was a Mitzri, but he has thrown his lot in with the Jewish people. Here he is. I want to be part of the Jewish people. And he is Jewish. His mother's Jewish. So now what's supposed to happen with a person like this? Is he a man without a tribe? Where is he going to pitch his tent? If he can't pitch his tent with the family of Dan, there's no other tribe where he belongs. So you know what we're talking about? We're talking about a person who is Jewish, who's part of the Jewish people, but he has no place in the Jewish people. This is a tragic situation of the highest order. I mean, I could make a case over here that my Jewish liberal bleeding heart would get you all bleeding for. The Chachman is, he's a homeless Jew. The Jew without a tribe. The man without a camp. So you know what? It's true. He's got a serious problem.
He has a very serious problem.
But the problem has to be dealt with. The question is, how do you deal with the problem? How do you deal with the problem?
And that's really what it seems Torah is talking about. There are appropriate responses,
and there are responses that are inappropriate. There are responses that are tragic. The fact that a person has a problem, even a serious problem, does not therefore give him license to go out and curse God. Never, as the harachmanis of God, everything is his fault. Everything is his fault. There are a number of things that happen over here. I'll give you an example that I don't think is extreme at all, and you'll understand precisely what I'm talking about. A jury in Los Angeles finds four policemen innocent of having beaten a black. So there are two kinds of responses. One kind of response is Horban. 58 dead, thousands wounded, $750 million of property destroyed. That's one response. And then the other response is, I don't know, maybe peaceful demonstrations, maybe an appeal to a higher court. I mean, there are ways in which you respond. There are ways in which you react. Stam nachan achorben, totally inappropriate. Not only inappropriate, tragic. And the Torah is telling you, you know what, that's not the way you go about it. You have a problem? So you go back to Moshe, and you tell Moshe, Moshe, what do you mean to tell me? You're telling me that I have no place over here. I left my whole family in Mitzrayim. Is it my fault? Is it my fault that my mother became pregnant by a Mitzri? What do you want from me? It's not my fault. So you have to find a resolution to my problem. That would have been the a proper response. But his response is not really a response. It's a reaction. For example, if somebody beats up my little boy, I have one of two ways to respond. I can go beat up his little boy, or I can beat him up. If I beat up his little boy, that's an absolutely inappropriate response. But if I go to the source from which the trouble comes, and I fight with the one who beat up my little boy, that's appropriate. What brings that to mind? I'll tell you what brings that to mind. When we talk about the pasuk of Ayin Tachat Ayin, so I remember, there must have been at least a dozen times in the 70s and in the 80s, I don't know whether they do it anymore, but when Time magazine, which rhymes with crime, grime, and slime, so when Time would describe bacon as in Fagin, that's what I was referring to. Yeah, that ugly anti-Semitic remark. Anyway, so I just gave it back to them on tape now. So I remember when they would describe the Israeli Air Force attacking a terrorist base after there had been a terrorist incursion into Israel, they would attack. So a number of times I remember clearly the title of the article was Old Testament Vengeance, an eye for an eye. So of course there's a terrible mistake over here. There's a difference between revenge and retaliation. What's the difference between revenge and retaliation? As in the example that I gave you, if somebody beats up my little boy, so now, if I beat up his little boy, that's revenge. If I beat him up, that's retaliation. If Israel goes out after the terrorist bases from which the attack came, that's retaliation. That's not Old Testament vengeance. That's not revenge. And incidentally, as we pointed out, there is no Old Testament vengeance altogether. It's a total anti-Semitic misreading of Torah. But all right. Here we have this fellow who has a problem. So you know what the Torah is telling you? You have a problem. There are ways in which to react and to respond and to deal with it.
And there are ways which are absolutely prohibited.
The American bleeding heart liberals for years created a situation in the United States that every time an underprivileged teenager or adult would commit a crime, they'd run into court to protect them. Take a look. Look at his background. Look at the home that he came from. Didn't even know who his father was. Didn't get a proper education. Lived in the slums of Harlem. This is the harachum, oneness of him. And that created what was then known, and I don't know, it may even happen in the United States today, was called revolving door justice. Guy walks into court, and an hour later he's walking out of court a free man. There wasn't that much compassion and mercy for the victims, but for the perpetrators. Oy, for the perpetrators. Sure, we could make quite a claim over here. Poor Mikalev. What a rachmanis on this poor Mikalev. What a blessing. Why do you think he blessed him? Do you know his background? He never knew his father. Never knew his father. And you know what? Now I'll let you in. You know who his father was? It says Vayetze someplace else in Torah. You know where it says Vayetze? Vayetze Moshe betoch echov. Moshe went out amongst his brothers and he saw Ish Mitzri, an Egyptian man, hitting a Jewish man. Vayifen kovacho, and Moshe turned here and there and he saw that there's no one to turn to. He killed the Mitzri and he hid his body in the sands of Egypt. That Mitzri was the father of this Mikalel. Do you know who killed his father? Moshe. Vayetze. He went out. And here it says Vayetze. Do you know, Rashi brings it there, do you know how Moshe killed this Mitzri? By using the Shem HaMefodosh, he killed him with the divine name. Comes the son of Mitzri, and he curses the divine name as he comes out of the Bedin of Moshe Rabbeinu. Maybe now is the point at which we'll tell you the story that Chazal tells. Medrash Tanchuma. There are a number of variations between the Midrashim. But we'll read the Medrash Tanchuma that says, what happened over here? In Mitzrayim, there were Noksim and Shotrim. The Noksim were the taskmasters. They were Egyptians. The Shotrim, the officers, the police, they were Jews. Every Egyptian Noges had 10 Jewish Shotrim under him. Every Jewish Shoter had 10 Jews under him. Therefore, every Egyptian Noges was in charge of 110 Jews. Chatzman one day, Kodmo Noges L'Shoter. The Noges came out to work before the Jewish Shoter was there. So he got a hold of this Jewish Shoter and he told him, go gather your group of 10 together now and start working. As the Shoter went out of his house, the Mitzri went into the house and he lived with with his wife. And she didn't know. She didn't know that this was, she thought this was her husband. Chazar, out came the Mitzri and the Jewish Shoter. The Jewish Shoter sensed something is wrong over here. And the Mitzri felt that he is being suspected by this Jew of having done something terrible. So all of that day, he beat him, and he beat him, and he told him, work! Work harder. Out comes Moshe, and he sees this taking place. Nitznitza Ruach HaKodesh b'Moshe. The divine spirit came into Moshe, and he looked up heavenward, and he said, Lo Daila Rosha Zeh, not enough that this Egyptian Rosha, Ino et Ishto,
he tortured the wife of this shoter. Elachoser umakol abal, and he goes and he beats the husband. Miyad, immediately, you know what Moshe did. Vayachet ha-mitzvi, he smote the mitzvi, vayitmenehu b'chol, and he hid him, his body in the sand.
Alright. We're getting more information now. Torah still tells us that the response to suffering, the response to one's problems, has got to be a weighed and a balanced one. He has no right to come out, and as a result of the fact that because the court has found that he has no place in Dun, does not give him the right to curse. There's something else that we're learning here from Torah. And this is true of Torah law as it is true of all law. The purpose of law always is so that the greatest number of people can benefit. The purpose of law always is that the tovat haklal, what's the best for the klal. There are times that the individual is hurt. Sometimes, and they're rare, but there are times at which the law works against the individual. But the individual is going to have to understand that the benefit of the largest number of people is what is always most important. And then again, there are times at which it's not the law that is guilty, but there are human beings who can use the law or abuse the law. Classic example. Aguna. Always find every so often somebody is going to raise the scepter of those rabbis or Jewish law that has created the horrible, horrible problem of the woman who is an aguna. It's not the problem is not the halacha. The problem in most cases is people. People can be cruel. A husband who doesn't want to give a get, a wife who doesn't want to receive a get, two families that will blackmail one another. It is the individual who abuses the law. It's not the law that is at fault. In terms of the longer sweep of Jewish history, Jewish people had to have proper kiddushin and proper gerushin. There had to be proper marriage and proper divorce. Otherwise, a people would have fallen apart and lost its that which holds it together as a people. Its sanctity, its holiness, its dignity. There are individuals that are going to be hurt. In most cases, individuals are going to be hurt by other cruel individuals who take the law and use it against others. Give you a classic example. What happens if somebody is going to poke somebody's eyes out with a pair of tefillin? Have the tefillin lost their sanctity? Are the tefillin no longer holy? The tefillin remain holy. The only thing is the man has abused an object of holiness. One who uses the halacha as an instrument whereby to hurt somebody else, so it's not the halacha that's at fault. It's not Moshe who's at fault. It's not God who is at fault. Even in the worst instance, even in the event that we would say that there is no immediate solution to his problem, it may very well be that the well-being of the entire community dictates that it should be so. Okay, so one is going to have to carry the burden of his suffering. I have no doubt about it that they would have found some kind of an answer. They would have found. What do you think they were going to say? That there will be 12, really 13 tribes, and then we're going to have one fellow riding alone in the desert behind us? Let's give it an answer. I don't know. I'm sure the Ketzach Gifin and I dates it. Take a look. The daughters of Tzlofchad found themselves with a problem. The land
Eretz Yisrael was going to be given to to males. So their tata only had girls. So therefore, their father's family is not going to have a share in Eretz Yisrael. So they come to Moshe and they say, Moshe, it's a low fare. Not right. Why should we be left without a place in Eretz Yisrael? So you know what? Between the Rabbeinu Shlalem, Misha, and a few others, I'm giving an Eitzah. We found a way out. There would have been an Eitzah for the Mekalev. One thing is certain. To go out and curse God, like everything is God's fault. This is total destruction of a system. What it's really saying is the system doesn't work. The system is bad. It's not only a rejection of God, it's a rejection of everything that he stands for. Unacceptable. That's unacceptable. We can commiserate with your problem, but we cannot condone your action. So far, that's only one pshat in the Vayetze. So one pshat in Vayetze is that he went out of the Bet Din of Moshe. Bet Din of Moshe found that he has no place in the camp of Dan. The fellow who walked over to him and told him, "Hey, listen, you don't belong here." Was he a Shaynei Yid? No. No, he wasn't. He wasn't either. The Klei Yakar says that we're never told the name of the son of the Egyptian, and we're never told the name of the person who contended and argued with him. Says the Klei Yakar, Lo Peret HaKatuv Shem Shelechav Mehem. The Torah didn't tell us the name of any one of them. Lahorot to tell us, Shavu Shneim Pegumim. There was something wrong with both of them. And what would have been so terrible? All right, you want to stay here and join us in the tribe of Dan? Bevakasha, be my guest. Had to be something wrong with you. I mean, was he taking anything away? He got man from heaven just like everybody got man from heaven. He got water from the rock just like everybody got water from the rock. Well, so terrible. Now you can't stay here. We don't want you here. Nan duns raus. We don't want you. Says the Klei Yakar, Lo Peret HaKosov, the Pasuk did not tell us the name of any one of them. Lahorot in order to teach us, Shoyu Shneim Pegumim. Both of them, there was something wrong with both of them. Ki kol hayotze lariv maher, whoever goes quickly out to do battle and argument, vadai hu pogum. If you go out for a fight, then you should know, we can sign on the dotted line, something wrong with that fellow. Ve'eino min hanoshim hanodoyim b'shmom l'shem. The Tehillah. A person of that sort is not the kind of person whose name is going to be known as a source of praise and dignity. Therefore, by virtue of the fact that the Torah doesn't tell us the name of the Jew of Dan who started the argument as an indication, Nishkivein Kanshaina Pishain. Alright? And then he goes even further, Klei Yakar goes further, Elimin Haputim. Anshei Bliyal, lowly people, bad people. But you know what? It still doesn't justify blaspheming God. That's why it says by Yinotsu Bamachane, the camp. The pasuk says they argued in the camp. They were both equally guilty. And even more. One of the Mephoshim says on Vayetze. Do you know what Vayetze means? Not where he went out from, but how he went out. He walked out that day with the intention, if nobody was going to start up with him, he was going to start up. He went out, he was looking for it. He was looking for something.
Belligerent, hostile. There are people who forever walk around with a chip on their shoulder. And they're just waiting.
Anything is going to trigger it. The Vayetze comes to tell me the man was looking for Tzavis. He went out over there and he was looking for it. If it wouldn't have been one fellow who started out with him, there would have been somebody else. And if he wouldn't have found somebody else, he would have created the situation whereby there would be an argument.
But let's get back to our Rashi. We've only told you one pshat in Rashi. The first pshat in Rashi is Vayetze, that he went out of the Bedin of Moshe. The second pshat, the next pshat is Medrash Tanchuma asks, Mehechon Yotzo, where did he go out from? Reb Levi Yomer, Reb Levi says, Me Olamo Yatza, he went out of his world. Kemoshe Nemar beGoliat, it says by Goliath HaPlishti, Goliath. There it also says by Yetze. By Yetze Ish HaBeinayim Mimachanot Plishtim Goliath Shemo Migat. He went out, and what was it that Goliath did? He cursed the living God. That's what he did. The Vayetze over here is that Vayetze. I don't know, I'm only now beginning to think, why don't we make comparisons to other Vayetzes? I don't know. What did it say over here? Vayetze ben Isha Yisraelit. All right, Chazal knew that we're talking. The end tells us what kind of a Yitziah, what kind of going out this was at the very beginning. So he went out from his world. What does it mean he went out of his world? The Zohar and a number of Mepharshim point out that the world in which man lives is a world of sanctity. Each human being is a world in miniature. But it depends, what does the human being do with that world in miniature? A person who lives a good life has turned himself not only into a world of miniature, but he has turned himself into a sanctuary. That which is the repository of holiness. But then man can destroy that sanctity and destroy that holiness and move out of his world. A man is a world. Kol ha-mekayim nefesh achat mi-Yisrael ki-ilu ki-yem olam malei. Magen David Adon, the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, anybody who saves a Jewish life, it is as though he saved a whole world. Incidentally, there is, in that Mishnah, Masechet Sanhedrin, there is also another text that reads, Kol ha-mekayim nefesh achat, whoever saves a life, without the word mi Yisrael, from Israel. Saving any life is like saving a whole world. Me olamo yatzah, he went out of his world. Now, isn't that interesting? It may very well be, what was the last word in the pasuk before? Before the word Vayetze, the last word in Pasuk Tet, Olam Vayetze, he went out of Olam. He went out of the world. He removed himself from the world. The Sefer HaChinuch says, what is it that defines man as man? In the literature, the philosophical literature of the Jewish world of the Middle Ages, the world begins, the lowest level in the world is the domain, the inanimate silent object, the stone, the clump of earth. The level above it is tzomeach, that which grows from the ground. Stones, you know, don't give birth to other stones, but there's life in the world of that which grows. The next level is chai. The animal world is called the world of chai. And what is the world of man called? Midaber, the one who speaks. Because the great gift that God gave to mankind is the ability to speak. And speech means thought. There's a great deal that goes into speaking. All problems begin when there isn't too much that goes into speaking. When we speak off the cuff without thinking,
twice, without thinking twice, that's when all the tzuris begins. But the man is the crown of creation because he was given intellect, intelligence, a mind, which is expressed through the ability to speak, says the Sefer Achinuch, a man who takes this great gift and turns it against God who created him, that's the ultimate blasphemy of all. He has removed himself by his action from the world. When he is put to death later, that's only the ultimate and final result of a step that he himself took. He cursed God. So here, Vayetze, second shot in Vayetze, he stepped out of the world. You know, stop the world, I want to get off. He got off. Third shot, Rabrachia says, Meheichon Yotzal, where did he go out from? Mi Parsha Shelmala. He stepped out of the Parsha before. Or it may mean that because of the Parsha that came previously, immediately before this, that's where, that caused him to walk out. What was it about the Parsha Shelmala? Sir Abrachia says, the Parsha Shelmala is the baking of the 12 breads that are supposed to be put on the Shulchan. Amar, so this son of a Mitzri said, Derech HaMalachim, kings eat fresh, warm bread, papchama, every day. Shemot Zinina, a king is going to eat cold bread that's 9 days old? I mean, human beings can go to angels and get fresh bread. And God can't get himself fresh bread. He was making fun. He made fun of the whole halacha of lechem hapanim. What's worse, he didn't have the patience to find out. We find out from Chazal that the 9 days after the lechem hapanim had been baked, it was baked on Friday, it was put onto the shulchan on Shabbos, and the following Shabbos it was eaten. Gemara goes on even to say that it could have been even 10 and 11 days old. In the event that Friday was Yom Tov, so it had to be baked Thursday. And what happens if Thursday and Friday were Rosh Hashanah? Remember in Eretz Yisrael, the only time there were 2 days Yom Tov was Rosh Hashanah. So they had to bake it on Wednesday. So it was 11 days old. But it was as fresh at the end of the 11 days as it was at the time that it was baked. So it means, first of all, he made fun. He made sport. Now, what he didn't know was that there was nothing to make fun of at all. Obviously, if he made fun, there was something in him that, there was something that was cooking beneath the surface that brought him to this. But what do we accomplish by this pshat? We know why this parsha appears right here. It was directly related to the parsha, before. All right. So we see that amazing how one word really is the key around which everything revolves in this parsha. But there's something else that's very fascinating. I want to take you quickly to the very last pasuk in the parsha. It's just beautiful to see how mafarshim that may have been separated by hundreds of years may never even have seen one another. How they understand the pasuk. The last pasuk in the parsha is Vayadaber Moshe el Bnei Yisrael. Moshe spoke to the children of Israel. Vayotziu et hamekalel mikutz lamachane. They took the blasphemer outside of the camp, vayirgimu oto oven, and they stoned him. Ubnei Yisrael asu kashet tzivah Hashem et Moshe. The children of Israel did that which Moshe commanded. Many of the mefarshim are troubled by the last half of the sentence. Ubnei Yisrael asu, the children of Israel did kashet tzivah Hashem et Moshe, that which Moshe commanded them. Isn't that obvious?
The Lord commanded.
Yes. And then in the beginning of this last pasuk it says, Vayidaber Moshe al Bnei Israel, and Moshe spoke to the children of Israel, and then it says, Vayotziu, they took him out and they stoned him. Now, isn't the pasuk telling me that the children of Israel did what Moshe told them to do? It's there in the first half of the pasuk. Why does the pasuk have to repeat, "Ubnei Yisrael also, the children of Israel did as God commanded Moshe"? Unnecessary. Superfluous. We know all of that.
But there's no such thing as superfluous words in Torah. So there must be something that Torah is telling us. Let me just read. Let me read some of the Farshim. I'll begin with the Seferno. The Seferno says, "Ubnei Yisrael also kasher tziva Hashem et Moshe, shelo ragmuhu mipnei sino al shohayoger." The pasuk wants to tell us, don't for a moment think that they stoned him because this foreigner, this stranger, this Mitzri is getting his just deserts. No. They did it because this is what God wanted. This is what God wanted should be done. Not because of any hatred. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh.
Since all of this started as a result of an argument between a Jewish man and the son of a Jewish woman and an Egyptian man, there's place for us to say they did the judgment that Torah decreed because of Tino Shebelay. There was hatred in their hearts. They did it with a feeling of, ha, ha, you see what this Mitzri is going to get. Somewhere, someplace over there, in the heart of some Jew, there may have been a feeling of, alright, good riddance to bad rubbish. Good riddance. So he says, no. That's why the pasuk says, Omar. That's why the pasuk says, also they did kasher tzivo Hashem, the way God commanded. Litzat mitzvah Hashem u'shasu. They did it because it was mitzvah Hashem.
I want to read something else. And here is an indication that some of the things I may have said earlier may even be true. The Abarbanel says the following on this same question. Incidentally, the Rambam says same thing as the Seferno, same thing as the Or HaChaim. Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berliner, the Hamikdava, says the same thing. The words of the Rambam are: this is to tell us, lo l'sinat ben hamitzri. Not because of their hatred for the son of the Mitzri, who argued with the Israeli. He goes a little step further. He says, listen, they have to remove the evil from their midst. Along comes the Abarbanel, and listen to what he says.
Bola Hagin. This comes to tell us, Im heyot sheYisrael kimu vekivlu devar Hashem baseh. Despite the fact that Jews accepted God's divine instructions, hinei hem hayu nosim venotnim batavar.
It was something that they discussed amongst themselves, and it was something that was a subject for a great deal of debate. Umiderech svaratam.
From their point of view, the way they saw it, this blasphemer should not have been given the death penalty. Because he was the son of a Mitzri.
Precisely what he means by this, I mean, may very well be that what I'm saying, that, listen, what do you want? You know, he was raised in Harlem.
He comes from, his father was a Mitzri, so listen, not only that, but I will elaborate most probably on, he never had a father. He grew up without a father.
Maybe somebody on the side would have thrown in, you know what happened to his father.
You know, who killed his father and how his father was killed. So what do we expect? We'd expect he didn't have a father image in the house. Say he became a juvenile delinquent, and this juvenile delinquent now went out and he cursed God, so God has to take it so seriously. You know, there may very well have been all sorts of reason for Jews to think that it should not be done. But because such was the psak halacha min hashamayim, ubnei Yisrael asu, the children of Israel did that which God commanded Moshe. That's all. It's not ours to reason why. In other words, they bent their heads reverently before the psak halacha of God himself. I can have all of my svaras, I can think and I can feel, and you know what? My thinking and my feeling may all be wrong. And man has to know that you simply bow your head before the justice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I will also mash also, therefore the Torah says they did what they did, Lefisha Kain Tziva Hashem et Moshe. They did it only because God commanded Moshe, so Vekimu Vekivlu Mitzvato, they accepted his command, Im Heyot Shalo Hayot Kain Hadin Ladatam, even though they disagreed. So that's all. I disagree. Incidentally, if they wouldn't have done it, do you know what would have happened? They would, in a sense, have been perpetuating the precise crime that was committed by the Mekalel. The Mekalel comes out of the Beit Din of Moshe, and you know what? He feels otherwise. Do you know what would have happened? We would have had a snowball effect. The authority of the Beit Din of Moshe is no authority. The authority of God is no authority anymore. And you know what you have? You can have a community that is going to sink into absolute anarchy. That's schlugging and hargening in the gas. That's what's going to happen. So therefore, even Jews, even though Jews may have felt this is not right, maybe even it's unjust, in the longer view of history, it's God who knows best. It's a tragic story. After all is said and done, it's a tragic story. I mean, putting somebody to death is not something that is done lightly by Klal Yisrael. Not something that's done lightly by Klal Yisrael. What occurs to me is, of all of the historical incidents that we have in Sefer Vayikra, there are only two. And you know what the two of them are? They're both tragedies. Both tragedies, profound tragedies. On the great day of the dedication of the Mishkan, Nadav Aviv was struck down. And then we have another story of a person who curses and therefore is put to death by all of Klal Yisrael. There is, I believe, a relationship between the two. Nadav Aviv, as we explained when we learned that parasha, they did what they did out of extreme piety. That's what Moshe says to Aaron. This is what Hashem said, "Bikrovai ekadesh, I will be sanctified through those who are close to me." What did they do? They were overcome with a sense that they wanted to be close to God. They needed desperately that closeness. You know what we have over here? In this whole Sefer Vayikra that talks about the way in which man serves God, the sanctity and the holiness of the Kohanim, of the Migdash, of the Jewish people, Kedoshim to you, you be holy. There is one thing that is the antithesis of holiness. And you know what that is? Extremes. Not of our view were extreme piety, and the Mekalel was the extreme in the other direction. Neither one of the two is acceptable. You know, what I'm really saying is that we have to take a look at these two incidents and in a sense put them side by side. Because at the same time that we may feel, as the Abar Benel says, that God was unjust or it wasn't right, just learn that together with the parasha where God himself strikes down Nadav and Aviv.
Do you know what would have happened if Nadav, the Nadav Avius of this world, together with the Mekalel, with all of their best or worst intentions, they can eat away at the fiber of a people. The extreme ecstatic piety of Nadav Avihu, they meant well. But this is not the way. This is not the way God is going to be served. There's law. There is halacha, and halacha means, and remember, there, one of the things they were condemned of is that they didn't ask Moshe. The condemnation of the Mekalel is, yes, it came before Moshe, and he rejects Moshe. Do you know what it really means? That in a sense, I'm not making an equation, I'm not saying that the Mekalel equals Nadav Avihu, God forbid, I'm not saying that. Nadav Avihu were tzaddikim. That, as we pointed out, the Halacha says the day on which they died is a day of Tainus Tzaddikim. But the two can be extremely dangerous. The one who doesn't ask Moshe's opinion, is there a big difference between that and the one who has asked and rejects the opinion of Moshe? A Jewish people cannot survive with any one of these two extremes. In other words, if we are to call them that, let's say that there are good extremes and there are bad extremes. But good extremes are also bad extremes. And even for bad extremes, you can find like a little bit of good, like Nebuch, what did we want from this poor Ben HaMitzri? If in many cases of justice would be left in our hands alone, V'alkiven HaChorben, Elokim Nitzav, the Adad Kael, God is the one who stands in the Sanhedrin of Klal Yisrael. God stands there. There are times at which man cannot be the one who ultimately brings about justice. Justice comes through a partnership, in a sense, between God and man. So here they are, the two tragic stories. Both of them are tragic. Both of them appear in Sefer Vayikra, representing two extremes, neither one of them which is to be accepted. Another point. The truth is that we can go on for hours, but listen, Yitz Hashem, Gesundheit, there will be more years. It may very well be that in this last pasuk, Ubnei Yisrael also kasher tziva Hashem et Moshe, children of Israel did as Moshe had said, in addition to all of the pshatim that we have already said. Now, it's that they did it because God commanded so, and it was not out of a sense of it was not out of a sense of inner hatred, and it was not as though they were sticking up for their Yisraeli against this outsider, the Mitzri, or as the Abarbanel says, that they did it even though they may not have agreed with the Pesach, but they accepted God's divine justice. There's something else. There's something else over here. There was no lynch. Under other circumstances, you know what? Chmonin Itzlan, did you hear what this man did? I mean, people are standing. It happened in the camp. There may have been hundreds of people on the street. I wonder how we would react if we would hear somebody cursing the Shem Hashem, and we're just a few meters away from the Mishkan. There's the Amud Esh, the Amud Anan. Man is coming down from heaven, a sense of holiness and sanctity. Do you know what you do with a fellow who curses the name of God?
Kill him on the spot.
On the spot. Tear him apart. What is somebody supposed to do when he hears the cursing the name of God? You know what you're supposed to do? You're supposed to take kriya. Supposed to take kriya. One could have imagined that in different places, under other circumstances, by different people, this would be reason enough for the people who are standing there in the camp, on the street, to take this man
and dismember him limb from limb, to reißen the earth.
Well, B'nai Yisrael also, Klal Yisrael are a disciplined people. B'nai Yisrael also, they did kasher tziva Hashem et Moshe. They did what the law was.
And incidentally, that's the whole point of this all. The whole point of this all is that I have to accept the law, regardless of what my own feelings are, for better or for worse. The law is what has to govern how I feel. It's not that I feel a certain way and therefore I now form the law to express my feelings. That would be dangerous. That would be destructive of any society.
A true Torah society is a society in which, you know how I feel about something? I take a look, what does Halach have to say about it? What would Moshe Rabbeinu have said about it? Ubnei Yisrael also, meaning, I would say now, pshat in this Ubnei Yisrael also, that the way in which they conducted themselves throughout this incident, from beginning to end, they did precisely the way God would have told Moshe. The man did a terrible thing, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised that there were Jews who were standing there in the camp, they talked Kriya and started crying, but didn't raise a finger against him. We have to bring him to Moshe. We don't know what to do. We're going to have to ask Shaila. We're going to have to bring him before the proper authorities in order to find out what to do. Nobody has the right to take the law into his own hand. Nobody has the right to act on the basis of his emotions or his feelings alone. Because that's precisely what the Mekalel is doing. And Lahavdil, that's what Nadav Thadiyu are doing. So that as I look at the Pasuk now, I see that the beautiful way in which the Torah ends this parasha by saying that the entire incident was that B'nai Yisrael acted through Anut, Kasher Tzivu Hashem et Moshe, the way God commanded Moshe. Not merely referring to the fact that they stoned him, because that the first half of the Pasuk said that they took him out and they stoned him. But in everything, they acted with dignity. They acted al pi Torah. Everything has to go through court of law. We're going to wait. We're going to hear what the Rebbeinu Shlom has to say, and we will act accordingly.